Welcome to the Hump Day Podcast. My name is Pastor Kevin Robertson. It is May 31st, 2017. Now, this is the last podcast of the year. We're going to take a break. And the last one, I waited for the best. Her name is Christine Jewell. Now, the reason I wanted to interview Christine Jewell is because she started coming to church. When did you start coming?
I think about 2 years ago.
2 years ago?
Almost 2 years ago.
How long ago? Okay. Now, what's interesting about Christine is she sits in the same place every Sunday. I can tell you right now, when I'm facing the sanctuary, she sits to the left, way in the back. Correct?
Correct.
And so, and how I knew this is usually when I'm finished the service, I go and greet in the back, like a typical old school pastor at the benediction, they walk in the back. And Christine has the most beautiful smile in the world. And I didn't know much about her. And so every Sunday, Christine's sitting in the same place by herself every Sunday. And then one time I bumped into her outside the church and we had this conversation with her. And I go, this girl has a story. So anyway, how did you find her church, Christine?
Well, I live in the area.
Okay.
And I used to always walk, you know, I walk to and from work. I don't walk, stay that far from my job. And I pass the church all the time.
Right.
So, I mean, just physically, just seeing the church, oh, it's a nice church. It's, you know, okay.
A little funky building.
And so, I was like, that's very interesting. Didn't think much of it in the first year or so. And I, you know, walking in the doors was one day, I don't know what it was, but I was just walking past the church and I was like, okay, in my head, like, God, if this is the church you want me to walk into, you know, you'll send me there.
Right.
It didn't happen until maybe weeks later. And I said, well, Lord, I promise you, I'm going to go to that church. Mm-hmm. At least number one time that I'm going to go in this church. And I said, I'm going to go this Sunday. And that Sunday came, I didn't go. I was like, I was tired because I had got out work
God,
late.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was like, Lord, forgive me.
Okay,
so I said, but I get in there next Sunday.
Okay.
So the next Sunday came, and my ideology of church was like, man, don't tell me it's going to be one of these kind of churches I'm used to being back home.
Right.
Southern Baptist, right? And so I said, well, I'm just going to go in there and see what happened. And if it gets to that point where I feel like that is one of those churches that I'm used to back home, I just sneak out.
Okay.
So I walked in and, hey, been in there ever since.
Okay.
It was
so great. Usually when you sneak out, it's like, I need to go to the restroom.
Yeah.
take off. Or during the announcements, excuse me, I forgot my Bible in the car.
Yeah, because trust me, I had scoped out where the exits were. You know,
it must be hard because I don't know how it's like. If you're looking for a church and new to the city, just to walk in a church building and not knowing what in the world can be going on in the building,
right.
That could be a scary thing, I would assume.
Yeah.
You know, because they say that people pretty much have made their decision 5 minutes into being in church, whether they're coming back or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so, now you work for, what do? You, because you were saying you walk past.
Yeah, I work for what is now AT&T. It was DirecTV at first.
Oh, it's and AT&T now.
And I just tell people, make a long story short, I watch TV all day. So that's what I do. There's nothing important. I'm not saving lives. I'm not curing any diseases. You know, they call it entertainment. You know, well, entertainment is a description of the beholder, so okay. I just say I watch TV all day.
That's funny. That's it. So now, you were just saying when you came new to the city, so where did you come from?
I'm originally from Memphis, Tennessee.
Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah, Memphis, and
okay,
Tennessee.
Let's open up that a little. Coming from Memphis, Tennessee, brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have two older sisters and an older brother. I'm the youngest.
You're the youngest.
I'm the youngest.
Little kid,
yeah.
Okay. And then, so tell us about your upbringing. Tell us what kind of environment you grew up in. Because I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what your childhood was like. Grew up in church.
My childhood was pretty, you know, typical. My story starts off like any other inner city kid.
Okay.
You know, they like to say you're poor and you're black, things like that. Believe it or not, a lot of times we were kind of taught that this is how you have to walk in the world, because you already have these three strikes against you. Right. And those three strikes that people used to say were you're poor, you're black, you're female, or you're male. So, but okay. My parents didn't teach that.
Okay.
And I was one of very few kids, which I didn't find out till later, that it was an issue, that I was one of very few kids to have a father around.
Right.
So my childhood was pretty cool. It was pretty decent. Right. I was in a very challenging neighborhood, mm-hmm. but, you know, my parents, you know, we never missed a beat.
Right.
We had food on the table, right. clothes on our back, a roof overhead. Maybe not the best roof.
But, or the best clothes.
Yeah. But we had a roof overhead. And my father, I didn't grow up in the church. My father was a deacon in the church that he went to, but he didn't force us to go to church.
Okay.
He was more
but he
like,
went to church.
Yeah, my father went to church Monday through Friday, because one, he went to church on Sundays, his church, okay. and he worked at a church. Okay. So he worked
at the church too.
So he worked at a different church than the church that he attended. So I was like, dang,
That's so interesting to me that your dad went to church, worked at a church, but didn't bring you to church.
Yeah, because he felt like my dad was a very quiet, in the corner, laid back, okay. very introverted type of guy. And he just felt like your direction is your direction.
Right.
Your path is your path. And, you know, I'm here to provide your necessities
right.
and not your life path. And
oh, that's interesting.
So he just basically, at least I remember him telling me
right.
that if there's going to be a relationship with you and God, that is going to be on your time,
okay.
you know, God's time. Don't allow someone to dictate that time for you.
Okay.
So, as a kid, I was just like, whatever.
Okay.
You know, I'm like, okay.
Did you go to church at all every once in a while?
Yeah, I went every once in a while. Okay. I think just like a lot of Southern people, if you don't go to church throughout the year, you at least go on Mother's Day and Easter. And that's and that's the times that I went.
I think that's more than Southern. I think that's a whole world thing.
Because you know,
we are packed out on Easter Sunday, yeah. and I'm going, where in the world are these people
yeah.
doing the other 51 Sundays of the year.
Right.
So you kind of went to church Christmas and Easter. So when did it get to the point where you just go, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready for the God thing.
Was it this
big elaborate thing or just...
You know, I don't think it was at any particular point. What I think what it was, I got tired.
Mm-hmm.
I have to go back 4 years prior to when I got here.
Mm-hmm.
I lost my father my senior year in college.
Okay.
So he didn't see me graduate from college. But mm-hmm. there's one thing my mother said to me that kind of knew he was still there was that she told me, she said, I never knew how much you looked like your father
uh-huh.
until you walked across that stage.
Oh, really?
So I was like, wow, my dad was with me.
Okay.
However, I didn't understand grief.
Okay.
Like grief, I didn't know what
right.
that meant. I saw it when my grandmother passed. I saw it in my sister when my nephew
mm-hmm.
passed. So it's like maybe they just you know sad, but
right.
I didn't understand grief until I experienced it losing my father.
Right. How did your dad die?
My father died of diabetes.
Okay.
Yeah, he was diabetic.
Wow.
And when he passed away, I was in this transitional period.
Mm-hmm.
I was going into adulthood, graduated from college,
right.
didn't know the world.
Yeah.
So I had to get out in the world. So it was all my life, my parents have been there. Like,
right.
I didn't get my driver's license until, like, my late 20s almost. Because my dad took me everywhere. My
okay.
mom found ways
okay.
for me to get me.
Right.
Just, I didn't need to get them.
Yeah.
So my parents were already there. If they were, my parents weren't there. My siblings were there.
Right.
So I was like, I don't need to rush into nothing.
Okay.
But when my father passed away, and my mom was like, you got to get out in the world
okay.
because you grown now.
Right.
So
you would you describe yourself as a daddy's girl?
I would describe myself as a little sister that's attached to her siblings and to her parents. Okay. I am a daddy's girl, a mama's girl, a little sister.
You have emotional ties everywhere.
Yeah, I am very connected to
your family. Like, don't leave.
I am not ashamed to say I am very attached to my mother and my father and my sisters.
Didn't get your driver's license. Yeah. They were taking you everywhere.
They take me away. So I have no problem just telling people, yes, I was very close, dependent on my family. So going through that, I have to say that emotionally, I spiraled out of control.
Mm-hmm.
I was just emotionally dead. You know, right. I didn't know.
Okay.
And for 15 years of my life, honestly, I have to say 15 years of my life, mm-hmm. I was in this, I don't know life.
Right.
Like, everything was, I put an honey over my true self.
Okay.
And what you saw or heard from me was like, wow, who is this person?
Right.
You know, everything was, I felt in order for me to get out in the world, I had to put on a certain shield to protect myself because my dad was no longer there.
Right.
My mother was like, you got to try. My sister's now like, okay, it's time to cut the screen. Right. I'm like, everybody let me go right now.
Yeah.
And here I am, like, mad at God because you took my dad away.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
I'm like, upset at the world, basically. And so
I always use the terminology, I'm pissed off at everybody and everything. It doesn't matter.
It was,
I don't know you, I'm pissed off.
Yeah, it was just emotionally bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just emotionally bad. And
I'm sorry.
So it gets to the point where before I even knew it, 15 years of my life had disappeared. I can't tell you where they went.
Really?
I was mentally gone. I stopped dreaming. I stopped feeling. Mm-hmm. I stopped everything. It was nothing there.
Okay.
I mean, if you ask me what you was doing at 28, I don't even know.
Okay.
I don't remember.
No, this is due to your dad, or just due to just the whole outlook in the world.
It was all that.
Because growing up in the South, I'm assuming the racism and prejudicism was pretty huge.
Oh yeah, and it's still pretty huge. Okay. The thing was, I mean, it was a combination of it all. It was like a whole big gumbo pot of it all.
Right.
I mean, it makes a beautiful dish, but it just doesn't make sense.
Okay.
It was me transitioning, you know, coming out of college, going into the world.
Right.
My father, losing my father unexpectedly. Taking those feelings and being mad at the, you know,
right.
I wouldn't say I was mad at the world, but I was just very frustrated and like,
disappointed?
Yeah, just very disappointed. I was not only disappointed in that, I was also disappointed in myself.
Right.
Because I'm thinking, you know, I had this blueprint of life, but that blueprint wasn't designed for me.
Okay.
And so I was trying to follow this blueprint that wasn't designed for me, meaning these are the things that you do in order for you to succeed.
Okay. And who was giving you that blueprint?
Just life itself.
Okay, society.
I mean, society. Okay. You know, society itself was like, these are the things you have to do to succeed, to become a better person, to become successful. Because, you know, you coming from a very poor neighborhood. I grew up in the poorest area in Memphis.
Okay.
So I'm coming from, you know, I don't like to say I'm coming from nothing because, like I said, I never missed a beat. We had food, we had clothes, shelter, all our necessities. But, yes, our neighborhood was very challenging.
Okay.
Our education was not there.
Right.
So what can you do,
yeah.
you know? And I was always the kid that never wanted to follow the norm, but I didn't know how to not follow the norm.
Right.
So I just grew up. I put myself in a corner.
Okay.
So that's probably why you always see me in the back of the room. I'm always in the back of the room. And I you know, a lot of it was intentional and a lot of it was, you know, by force, you know, but.
So it gets to the point where you have all these many years of going in this almost emotional and spiritual darkness, you know, where you can't remember. When did the light start beginning to say, okay, I'm starting to see a flicker of light in my future, in my life?
I pretty much had an emotional breakdown.
Okay.
It was, I said, maybe five years ago.
Okay.
It's about 5 years ago. I don't know what happened. My body just felt heavy. My heart was heavy. like I said, emotion in that, I was gone. Like, right. I just, everything was not positive, right. I tell you.
Was it like was it a total breakdown?
It was, I call it an emotional breakdown because the night, I don't remember the exact night, but I remember one night I just dropped down on my knees and just started praying for peace.
Oh, really?
And I cried like a baby. It probably felt like I cried for days, but it probably was like 5 minutes. And I just told the Lord, I said, you know what? If you don't give me nothing else, just give me peace. Okay. Everything else will be a bonus. And
that's how you prayed.
And that
was the most simplistic little prayer.
I didn't know anything else. Right. It was because, you know, I didn't know how do you pray. It was like, how do you pray? But that particular night was just a conversation with God. Like, I don't know where I'm going. I don't know what I'm here for. What's my purpose? None of this. I'm tired of feeling, you know, left out. Right. I'm tired of feeling disappointed. I'm tired of being embarrassed. I'm tired of, you know, all these things that I put on myself, that society was throwing me, all these daggers, you know, and I just got tired of it.
Yeah.
And broke down at night, and I've been trying to overcome it ever since.
Wow, it's interesting. So when you broke down at night, and you specifically remember, now a lot of people think, okay, I broke down and I had this prayer, then all of a sudden I just, oh my goodness, I'm free at last, and I'm running around and my whole life, I found my purpose, I found this, everything's directed, I have a big smile on my face 24/7 now.
But I wish it was like that. I was a work in progress, and I'm still a work in progress.
Tell us about that work, because I think a lot of people who would be listening get frustrated when they go, okay, I did the prayer, I did this, I came to my knees, I did the simple prayer, and I'm still struggling.
Yeah, for me, I think from my perspective, I can't speak for those who might do that.
You are your
the
best
struggle,
storyteller.
Because you want it right now,
right?
And I knew that right now was not going to happen. If I was 15 years in this darkness, it's going to take 15 years. I hope it doesn't take 15 years, but it's going to take some time to get out of this.
Right.
And that was another one of my things. I'm a very impatient person.
Right.
I tell you, man, I am very impatient. I don't live. I had to learn to live for today.
Right.
And that's what I'm, you know, that's what I'm trying to live for today. Okay. Although I'm beginning to dream again.
Right.
I'm beginning to set goals again, try to challenge myself again. I still struggle with living for today.
Right.
And that's what we had. Well, for me, that's what I had to learn. And it says it in the Bible. Tomorrow has a story of its own.
Yeah.
That's not the exact words, so don't beat me up. Those aren't the exact words, but, you know, along that line. So I'm beginning to live life for today.
Right.
And because tomorrow frustrated me so bad. I was so frustrated because I never lived in the day. I was always living for tomorrow, the next week, or, you know, the future like that. And you can't see it. You can't feel it. You can't, you know, develop it.
Right.
And when you see, you know, from my perspective, when you see people reaching their goals and their dreams and things like that, I was like, how are they doing this?
Yeah.
And I can't, you know, I'm not saying anything bad about them, but I'm like, you know, I can't do that I can't walk on both sides of the fence. Either if I'm going to believe that God is going to guide me, I need to believe that. And a lot of the people that I was seeing that was reaching these successful goals and financial goals and things like that, they didn't even have a relationship with God. So I'm like, do I need a relationship with you?
Right.
Or can I do it on my own?
Yeah.
And I was like, doing it on my own wasn't getting it. So God, I must need you, because for me, it's not working.
Right.
So I tell people, you know, if that's the case, you have to be patient.
Right.
You have to be patient. You have to want to change in the mind, because changing the mind eventually changed the heart. At least for me, it did.
Absolutely.
And so you can have it in your mind all the time, but if you're not executing it, if you're not letting it go, and you're not letting it penetrate your soul and in your heart, it's just going to be in your mind. It's going to frustrate you,
because
you're seeing more than what you need to see, and which is nothing.
Right. Well, even Paul, and I think in the book of Romans, talks about this, that the transformation starts with a renewing one's mind.
Mm-hmm.
So, what you just said is totally biblical.
Mm.
And it's almost like I prefer people that kind of, like myself, that kind of know, I'm kind of quoting the Bible. I'd rather have people living the Bible. And what you're just describing is exactly what Scripture says about the transformation of the renewing of your mind. Because you're right. It starts with the way we think about ourselves, think about God, and how you got all that frustrating anger. So do you remember how long ago that prayer was?
About 5 years ago. Five years ago.
Now we got somebody that you yourself that's clinging to your dad, clinging to your mother, clinging to your family, won't get her driver's license because, I'm not doing this. But you're out here, and your family is still in the South, Tennessee, right?
Yeah.
So let me in your world here when it comes from somebody that just is holding on to their family so hard and so much and did this breakthrough to... I'm going to California by myself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so tell me about this. I'm fascinated with the story.
I thought when I graduated from college, I had lived on my own for a while because I lived in Atlanta off and on by myself. So I was kind of used to being away from home. But the whole thing with California was that I was on my way to New York. And New York had a blizzard. And Christine don't do cold. So I said, well, California, here I come.
Christine don't do cold. If you're from the South where it's high humidity,
I don't like cold weather like that. So I was like, you know, I'm going to go to California. And I was talking to a buddy of mine on the phone. And I told him, I said, man, in May, I'm moving to California. He was like, well, if you don't come, I'm going to come and get you. I said, nah, you ain't got to worry about it. And this was a year before I even made the move.
In your mind,
I was going to move to California. And since I had told someone, and this was part of me coming, you know, that honey of putting over, you know, shade on my true self, I always try to keep this quote-unquote pride, right? So I was like, well, if I said that I'm going to do this, I can't have him think I'm a liar because I cannot have my image destroyed. Like, I'm already internally destroyed. I can't have the outside of me destroyed. Yeah. So I was like, well, I got to do it now. Okay. Say it something.
I said it a lot.
Like, okay. I got to do it now. So I try to pride myself on being a woman of my word.
Right.
Whatever it is. If I say I was going to do it, I'd do my best to do it. So this
was... Have you been to California before?
You know, my buddy who I was talking to on the phone and another guy I went to school with, we did road trips.
Okay.
Came a couple of times. The very first time I came to California, I was like, I'm not liking this. This is just too much. The second time when I came with my second buddy, I was like, okay, it's what it is.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But that was it. It was just like maybe a week here. So my total of California before I actually moved was collectively 2 weeks, you know?
Yeah.
So you,
in your head, you just thought, I'm going to California. You didn't have this great, extraordinary experience there.
No, I felt like I needed to get away from what I knew. Everything that I saw, the landscaping, I didn't try to get away from the food, but apparently that went too. But I love Southern cooking. Trust me. And that's one of the things I'm missing.
Yeah, you don't like sushi, I guess.
Yeah, no, you can have that one. So I needed to get away from everything that I knew.
Right.
Everything.
Why was that so important to you?
I had to begin to see that, you know, life had something more to offer.
Okay.
Because I never knew what I wanted in life because I knew if I began to say things, you know, growing up in, you know, those areas, that area of Memphis, you know, very challenging. Right. You didn't see anything positive, really. You had to really dig deep. That's when I learned to begin to look at people's souls, then a lot of their actions.
Right.
And so you really had to dig deep to find the positive. And I never knew what I wanted out of life, but I knew what I didn't want.
Right.
And so I would just floating around in the universe, like, I don't know where I'm gonna land. But coming out here, I said, well, it's nothing like it's gonna be in the South. The landscaping is gonna be different. I'm searching for diversity because I believe that diversity would allow you to be, you know, be accepting, be more tolerant of things and people. And when you diversify your mind, you diversify your thinking, you begin to just be tolerant of things.
Okay.
And the South has such an intolerance for a lot of things, you know.
What are some of the big, I've never been to the South. So it's almost an experience. And before I go there, I want to ask you, you said something that really deep. You were talking about, I'm looking at people's actions, but I really want to focus on their soul. You said something about that, that you want to look beyond the carcass of the body and the behavior, but looking at the soul.
Right.
Describe that to me, why that it's so important to you.
Because I have to say, you know, that came about because I've seen, you know, things abused. Not in my own household, but in my environment, you know, outside my household. And I never understood what triggered certain things from, you know, from domestic to just fights or just anything. I'm like, what was the purpose? I never knew. And it was the person's actions that did that. But I'm like, but this is a really nice guy or a really nice lady. And I just, as a kid, I always wondered, like, there's something different that I'm seeing. I don't know what it was. And I'm like, that's not the same person. I just never thought that that action matched that person or what I was seeing beyond, you know, the actions of the person.
So instead of focusing on, hey, they're a bunch of hypocrites, you're focusing on what is broken inside of you? What is broken in the soul?
Mm-hmm.
What is missing in your life? Is that it?
Missing in my life?
No, missing in their life.
Missing in a person? Yeah. I don't know. I just felt like the soul really told more of the truth than anything.
Right.
You know, they say your eyes are the windows to the soul. And to me, that's very true because I've seen the look of, like, straight up hopelessness. But how can you have the look of hopelessness with a smile on your face? I'm like, something's contradicting here. And I'm like, well, there's got to be something. I just can't explain it. Like, it's got to be something.
No, it's fascinating.
So the bigotry, you know, like I said, I'm from the South, and I'm from the Bible Belt of the South. And it was just the actions of the people were just never right. And I'm like, you can't be that kind of person and say and turn around and pick up the Bible. I never understood that one either. And if you go to, at least back in the day, grandma's old, you know, auntie's house, you're going to have one book. You might have one book in that house. And that book going to be in the bathroom or on the side of a chair, and it's the Bible. Now, how are you this close to something that's supposed to be so positive when your actions are so negative? I never understood that. So I was like, well, let me stop looking at the person's actions. Because when you react to, you know, to actions like that, you're going to get, you know, maybe the negative part. But if you just sit calmly and just look at the person's actual movements through life, which is, to me, the spirit of the person, I think you would get a better story of the person. And I never was taught ever to see racism. My family, well, my father and my mother would stop you in your tracks if you say something bad about someone. So I'm like, you know, that's got to be something to the spiritual thing. I don't know what it is, but there's something there.
So then within a year, you're experiencing this. The year you told your friend, I'm moving to California. And then you're thinking, oh, goodness, I need to be a woman of my word. Look, thank goodness you didn't say, I'm going to jump out of a plane, go
crazy.
I have no mind saying, I'm not a person of my word. I changed my mind. But you stuck to the game. So tell me what was going through your heart and through your soul the day that you were moving to California. Like, you just go, oh, no, I'm going.
The day that I moved to...
Do you remember how you were feeling?
Yeah, I was actually excited because I was coming for a job interview.
Okay.
And it was June 2nd, 2010. I mean, 2013.
Okay.
And I was just like, wow. Okay, I'm about to move to California. And it was a Saturday, and I flew out here, and the sun was as bright as it was. The sun was so bright. I was like, wow, I'm just excited. I was more excited to come
because
I didn't see, you know, I didn't see the challenges I need to, that I was going to face when I got out here. Because, you know, you have to find work, you have to find housing. So there was the challenges that I didn't even see. All I knew, I was flying out here, I had two bags in my hand. And enough money to get a one-way ticket back if that 3 months didn't last. So
okay, you got enough savings. So you committed yourself for 3 months.
Yeah.
Right, and said, like, I've got to get established, but I'm going to keep enough money
to get back home.
Okay.
So you should hear me say I was attached to my family.
That's it. So some of those challenges that you weren't thinking that would happen, do you remember them, what they were? Like, you're going, I didn't even think this was going to happen.
You know what? My transition was easier than I expected.
Okay.
A lot of people was like, man, things happen for you pretty fast, like pretty quickly. I'm like, what do you mean? I mean, you get out, you find a job, you got a place to stay and things like that. I didn't even have a vehicle when I moved out here. So I had to get a car to get to and from work at the time because I was living in another area.
Right.
But it didn't. I didn't feel what I felt years prior.
Right.
I didn't feel any pressure. I didn't feel any regrets. I didn't feel any doubts. I didn't feel, you know, any stress. You know, it was more like, okay, things were moving, and I didn't give it a second thought. All I knew is that it was happening.
Right.
And I was like, is this what peace feels like?
Okay.
And I stopped questioning it. I was just like, all right, they just keep it moving.
Like, I'm in a good place.
Yeah, I'm in a good place right now.
I don't know how I got here.
My heart don't feel so heavy.
Yeah.
I'm moving along. Okay. So I said, if I can get a job in 3 months, and I'll stay.
Mm-hmm.
And the third month, I was like, well, the place that I was staying, I think I had like a few weeks left before my time was up. And DirecTV called me for a job. So I had like 2 weeks to try to find permanent housing.
Wow.
And I was like, okay. So within 2 weeks, I had to find a place to stay and a car to drive. And I was like, wow, okay, this is really happening.
Right.
And I said, if I find a job and I stay. And I called my mom. I said, well, I guess I'd be staying in L.A. She was like, okay.
She wasn't all trying to, like, my mom would be laying all kinds of guilt.
Oh, you know, my mother, she,
okay.
You can tell that, you know, she was kind of like, oh, you know, my baby's gone again. And, but she tried to be, like, this strong person and not show her weakness.
Supportive.
Yeah, she wanted to do that. But she was like, well, okay, let's just say that my mother and I, we talk minimum 2 times a day.
Okay.
So that just goes to show you she probably just as, you know, nervous as I was because we talked so much.
Yeah.
But it's, so my journey, you know, in the end, just getting away from the norm, getting away from, you know, what did I grow up in.
So you've been here since 13, so about 3 or 4 years.
4 years.
Okay,
almost
4 years.
4 years in June.
Now, going back to the darkness part of your life, now, can you look back and say, when you said that prayer where you are now, have you come a long way?
Oh, I've come a tremendous amount. I have to say, I've come to the point where, man, just this morning, I believe I was praying that the Lord, please don't allow me to make a U-turn.
Okay.
Because I have come so far.
Right.
I think I'll forever be a work in progress.
Right. I think we all are. Absolutely.
You know, once your emotions have been destroyed, and my emotions weren't destroyed by somebody else, I actually destroyed myself.
Right.
And so I had to get over that guilt of you, and the guilt and embarrassment. So I had this vision of myself actually being broken down in millions of pieces, and I kind of see myself being put back together, you know, with these little bits and pieces, although there's cracks.
Mm-hmm.
the water won't leak through those cracks, because I feel like now, you know, God is a super glue holding it all together. Right. So, yeah.
It's a perfect analogy, too.
I just pray that I can just keep moving. Yeah. The goals, like I said, I'm beginning to dream again, which scared me. Because, wow, you actually had a dream. Like, you really want to set a goal.
What is and, your dream?
Personally, dream is to, like I said, get to a point where I can wash away the fact that I'm seeing people, you know, the physical part of people. Mm-hmm. I want to see the soul of a person.
Okay.
Because when you see the physical part, at least for me and from what I experienced growing up, is that when you see the physical part of a person, it determines whether you're going to have a conversation with them, whether you're going to eat with them, whether you're going to play with them, go to school with them, send your child to go and play with them, things like that. I want to be able to see past that.
Yeah.
I want to be able to see, like, the person itself and, you know, just have conversations with everybody.
Okay. And it's interesting, too, if you're listening to the podcast, what I usually do before the podcast starts, I type out the names and I say, hey, and I ask Christine, I said, hey, I need to go on your Facebook and pull down your profile picture. And you said, I don't do Facebook, I don't do social media. And I said, can I have a picture of you? And what did you tell me?
Oh, yeah. Can you put up a picture of something that represents the spirit? Because I don't want people to see me. I want people to see my spirit.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Which I think is deep. So if you're looking at the podcast and you're going, what is this picture? Instead of, I wonder how Christine looks like. This represents, the picture that's up there represents your spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, we haven't picked the picture yet. Right. Or we haven't, but by the time this is up on the podcast, I'll do it. So your whole thinking is, saying is, if we just see each other's spirit, it's almost like the Holy Spirit in us, you know, and that we're more unified. Because we've all, I shouldn't say we have all, because I have white privilege, and but there's a lot of people that have experienced this incredible racism and this, that you're judged by the color of your skin or where you're from. And I just think it's an incredible lesson if we as white people who have power in this society would do the same thing as you're doing, is look at the spirit.
You know, I just don't think, you know, somebody might come and knock me off, you know, knock me down for this, but I just don't think it's just white people.
Right.
I think it's the, you know, I think when people say, when you say white people, it's because white America, so to speak, has the power to influence the world, unlike any other whites in the rest of the world.
That's true.
White America has the, in my opinion, has the most influence on the world. And when, you know, we say, you know, this person has a privilege over another person, it's not because of their skin, it's just because they have the, they always had the financial backing or the resources to make them feel more powerful. Right. And when you see the elite, quote unquote, the elite, and all the faces look different from yours, you want to be like that.
Right.
So when you want to be like something that you feel is good, you strive to do that. So if that person that tells me this is the way to succeed and this is the way to be great in the world, but you have to do this.
Right.
And when you, when people tell you that you have to do certain things, because I'm pretty sure it happens in other cultures around the world as well, they might not experience racism, so to speak, because how can you experience racism when 90%, 98 plus percent of the people looks like you? So it becomes a class thing.
Okay.
It becomes, you know, your social thing. So there are other things that people would get in privilege that doesn't have anything to do with their race.
Yeah.
So it just,
it's more privilege with the money.
Right. Because, you know, because you got the money, you get the, you know, the superficial things in life, and everybody likes that. You got this nice car and a nice house, but you only see in the shell what's inside of that house. It can be turmoil. Oh, yeah. You know, you just looking from the outside looking in, well, and inside.
That's a good point.
You know, that's where I want to look at the spirit of the person, because inside, yeah, it's like, man, that person can really be bad right now,
right,
or they can be really good, but their actions are saying something else.
Right.
So look inside, you know.
Look inside the home.
Look inside the hole. Look inside the soul. Yeah, okay, exactly. Because then you really see what's going on. Because this person, this big old right, mansion,
right,
can be abusing his wife, the husband, the kids, or stealing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all these things.
Or
so,
in foreclosure.
Yeah. In debt up to their neck, yeah, you know, everything.
Borrowing money to keep the mortgage going.
You know, robbing Peter to pay Paul. You know? Yeah, so you just absolutely never know what's going on inside the shell until you actually take the time to really look right into it and listen to it. So, okay, that's my goal. Yeah. I don't really have any professional goals. Right. I just want to be able to feed myself and put a roof over my head.
No, that's perfect. Hey, while we close the podcast, if somebody's listening to this and going, man, I get it. I've been living year after year, and I can't remember what I'm doing. I'm in the darkest place in my life, you know, because many people are. Mm-hmm. And darkness is... It's white people, every other race, there is a darkness right in their lives that sometimes... And if somebody goes, I need to get out of this. I need to do this. Is there any way that you can give some type of direction or encouragement based on your experiences that would help somebody say, I need to get my purpose. I need to start dreaming just like you, you know? And would you encourage them just go out and move? You know,
well, you know, I think it all stems for me. It all stems internally. So, right, first I had to start to realize that I had to stop living in this world.
Right.
I mean, stop living of this world and okay, just live in it. Okay. So I can't look at what other people have, the materialistic things that they have or what they're doing in their lives. So stop living of the world and just begin to live in it. Pull back the awning on yourself, mm-hmm, and just expose yourself to not only yourself but to others. Stop running. Right. Stop running for tomorrow, mm-hmm, and live for today. Mm-hmm. Take away the fear. We have so many fears, mm-hmm, and that was one of my things too. I was afraid because, mm-hmm, you know, I'm attached to everybody, and here it is. I had to get out of my own. Stop being okay, afraid. Say, begin to find the courage. You only need just a little bit of courage, yeah, to make a huge leap right in life. I don't use my ladder to go up. I use my ladder to progress in life. So that's me. And if anybody that's wondering, stop comparing yourself to others. Your mirror image needs to be your image and not the image of somebody else. Mm-hmm. So have your mirror image be you, mm-hmm, and not the clothes that you wear, the cars you drive, the wife that, mm-hmm, you're married to, or the husband that you're married to. Stop having your, mm-hmm, image, mm-hmm, be defined by other people, right, and things around, yeah, you, and clean your soul out.
Yeah.
Clean your soul out, pulling back that honey and exposing yourself and say, you know, tomorrow will be all right.
Yeah.
As long as I make the choices right today.
Mm-hmm.
If I make the choices right today, the choices of tomorrow right should be just as fine.
Well, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please share it to other people. And if you've never met Christine, she sits in the back of the church. In the back of the church. You won't recognize her because you don't know, but you'll recognize her soul. Mm-hmm. You can tell, and I really mean that, she had a terrific spirit about her. And so we encourage you to go up to her. I know a lot of people are going to enjoy this podcast. This is our last podcast of this season. We're going to start the second season of the Hump Day Podcast in the first Wednesday of September. So have a great summer. Enjoy yourself. Join us at our church at 10 o'clock every Sunday. And remember, every day is a gift from God. Use it wisely. God bless you. We'll see you next fall.
Thank you.